listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. The following program may contain adult themes, discussion, and content that some people may find offensive. If you consider yourself likely to be offended, then perhaps you'd like to tune to another frequency for the next hour. If you have any feedback or would like to see information about our other shows, please go online to radioreverb.com.
How are we doing? Good evening. It's the HRV Hour on 97.2 FM, radioreverb.com. Hello, David.
Hello, Josh. How are you? We're in the studio this evening.
We're nice and warm.
By a fantastic guest, Mark Ward.
Yes, he's going to come on later, isn't he? He's got it's just written his memoir, which is an amazing book. So we're going to have a good chat with him. He's been on the show before, a couple of years ago, I think it was, Mark, I think, wasn't it? We're going to have a chat about his amazing book he's written. So, yes.
Also, we've got Philip has done an interview for us with Dan Harry from I Kissed a Boy as well.
Yeah, so he's also doing the Red Run, which is because it's all gearing up for the big day, World Day on the 1st. Yeah. I've been just getting ready for World Aids Day, actually. There's quite a few events coming up, isn't there? So we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we've got an awful lot to cover in the sort of community news this evening, haven't we?
Yeah, we're also going, you're doing, because we've got this show, and we're going to do an extra one next week, so because it's lead up.
Yeah.
But I'm just, I'm really into essential oils at the moment. I think I've told you about it. Essential oils, yes. I've gone a bit mad with them, and I'm creating my own lotions and potions.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
Creams and.
So we're all going to be getting little sort of gift bags of.
No.
No, okay.
I'm still learning, actually. I think it's like anything. It's like, because I know I got, when I was staying with you a while ago, and you had quite a lot, and I've always just bought one or two. But I've just gone mad. I just need to, yeah.
Yeah, I like, but this time of year, I like burning sort of frankincense and then pine needles and orange and like Christmassy smells. Anyway, so we're.
So how are you anyway? So
I'm
you.
I'm all right. Yeah, so I went to London on Friday to the Naked Truth launch of their calendar. And I bought a calendar, which is very revealing. Nothing, all done tastefully. And it's raising money for Positive East, and they have another event coming up at the end of November. So I did a little box pop with Joshua Royal, the founder of Naked Truth. So I'll play that later with the community news. The show opened this evening with Children by Robert Miles, which really does take me back to the 1990s, and I've danced for that many a time. And that was chosen by Mark, wasn't it, Mark?
It was, yes.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, Mark.
Hello, Josh.
I'm just going to read the your book, because it's called Bleeding Fabulous, which is an amazing title. The life of a... I always get this hemosexual.
Hemosexual, yes.
Yeah, so I'll just read you... I'm going to read you the little story at the back. So the story of how a young boy came to be infected with blood-borne viruses and, in spite of multiple death sentences, lived to become the world's first ever LGBTQ+ ambassador for haemophilia. Mark Ward is the founder of Hemosexual... championing equality, education and better healthcare for everyone with a bleeding disorder. Mark's battle to secure a public inquiry into the infected blood scandal has led him to places he never expected and to meet people he never dreamed of, as his frank and fabulous memoir attests. So welcome again.
Thank you.
So yeah, I mean, amazing book, and just want to say thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Yeah. It's always a pleasure.
Yes. So can you tell us why you wrote the book in the first place? What was the inspiration behind your memoir?
To be completely honest with you, it was the pandemic, the COVID pandemic. I sat there having been transported back to the 1980s with the fear. Mm. I mean, I didn't go out of the house for 2 years. Mm. And I've been in counselling because of the trauma of what's been done to me over the years. Yeah. I've been in counselling since 2006.
Right.
I would definitely recommend it to anybody. If you need, you just, even those people don't think they need to, but I wouldn't be here without my counsellor. I really wouldn't. And over the years, many times my counsellor has actually said to me, you know, you should really write a book. So during the pandemic, it was like, well, I'm stuck here indoors, not knowing if I'm going to leave. So I need to tell my story. At least I've got it down, because if I don't make it, then I want the world to know what happened.
Yeah.
So that's where it started. Yeah.
And so as I was reading some of it, and as a young boy, you were at school, and there was so much, you had problems, didn't you? How did that manifest when you were at school?
With the HIV?
Yeah, having haemophilia.
Well, you see, we were at the hospital. I'd had knee surgery. So leading up to when I actually very started school, where I lived up in Hertfordshire, there was no special education. No, anybody with a disability went to what they called special schools.
Yeah.
And my parents said no. There was literally an infant school and a junior school in the next road. Mm. And they didn't want me to go miles away to a boarding school. So they forced, and it's when the start of special educational needs in Hertfordshire began. So I had this special welfare helper that at the beginning couldn't be any further than 6 feet away from me.
Nice.
And so immediately I became a school freak. Mm. But when you're different stands out. But when you have to walk around the playground holding on to Missy's hand, you know, and she's there always lurking.
Draws attention, doesn't it?
Yeah. But even the kids were told before I went into the school that this special little boy is joining and you can't hit him or touch him because he bleeds. And so in the early days, during the 1970s, growing up in school or going through school, the more people that knew about my haemophilia protected me because they all knew.
Yeah, educated them, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was, you don't touch him. Then, of course, when AIDS hit, we all had a target on our back because we were being flagged up as the homosexuals, the haemophiliacs, and the heroin addicts, the 3H club, as they called it. Everybody knew. So what my mum had to do was go up to the school every week and give the headmaster a rundown of how I was. And he gave me permission to remain in the school. But if there was ever a complaint, I would have been kicked out.
Oh, God.
So it was just, you know, you weren't actually sure.
What would they complain about, that being a risk to other children?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because down, I think it was the West Country, there was a chief of police. His daughter went to a school where there was a haemophiliac in the school, and he didn't want the risk of this haemophiliac, infecting his daughter.
Yeah, by bleeding or doing it.
Posing some risk.
Disinformation of haemophilia, also sort of disinformation of transmitting HIV as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you understand what haemophilia was when did you start to understand yourself?
I was born with haemophilia, yeah. So I mean, right from word go, I was diagnosed at the age of three. So right from the age of three, we had it drilled into us, and I'd say us, that's what all haemophiliacs have drilled into them. If you bang your head, you'll die. If you hit your stomach, or even if you're sick, you'll die. And you spent so much time in hospital surrounded by death. So really your mortality was properly thrown into your face. But also, because they relied on us, and I can't really explain what a bleed feels like, but as a 3, 4, 5-year-old toddler, I would wake up in the middle of the night, go into my mum and dad's room and say, "Mum, I've got a bleed." Mum would say, "Where?" And then a process would kick in, so an ambulance would be called, and I'd be taken to Great Ormond Street. So same as any person living with a health condition, you know how to handle it, and you know the signs.
Very frightening as well.
Yeah, I mean, I had the added addition of nosebleeds, so you would be fast asleep, and then all of a sudden you were aware that you were wet. Or you started choking, and it would just be running everywhere. My poor mum would sort of, I'd scream for mum. She'd come in, and it looked like I'd had my head cut off, you know, because blood everywhere. Frightening.
Very frightening, yeah. And so why? Because I know I read some of your book about you moving on from school, and you had a penchant, for aviation, didn't you? So,
my passion,
your passion,
my
was
passion.
It?
Yes. Anything to do with civil aviation, aviation, full stop. I just love it.
Yeah.
It was something I think I got from my granddad.
Yeah. Oh, was he in aviation?
He was one of the first 50 men drafted into the newly formed during the Second World War RAF regiment.
Oh. Really?
So he loaded the bombs onto the Lancaster bombers.
Yeah.
My other granddad used to make the bombs that were loaded onto the Lancaster bombers. So there's, and when I used to go to Great Ormond Street, we had a hospital car driver who used to be a pilot of Lancaster bombers. So
oh, that you're really not.
Tell me. I would spend time in hospital and then go back to my nan's and my granddad's, and I would sit in their garden, which was in the flight path for Heathrow, and I just was fascinated by these beautiful aeroplanes. Like, where are they going? Where have they been? You know, all that.
Yeah.
And I just, yeah.
And you went into the British Airways training.
Yes, I left school in May of 85.
Yeah.
And I joined the YTS in September of 1985, the youth training scheme. Yeah. And I did that. It was meant to be for a year, but then they extended it for two. Then I had a temporary contract on flight inquiries, and then I went off into the airlines. I went down to cargo and was eventually made permanent. And that's where my career really was. I was based in cargo, but then I did secondments to other parts and other areas. So, but the youth training scheme as well. But my ambition was to be the first haemophiliac cabin crew member, to be a steward. And I had although I never officially flew as cabin crew, I had the opportunity to work, and I did what they call familiarisation flights. Yeah. And I used to take my uniform and help him out everything. So, yeah.
So living with a haemophiliac, does that affect, working at like a high altitude, does the air pressure and that affect your
needs
at all? No,
no, that doesn't, no. It's just really sort of, what you have to be careful of is people banging you with bags and things like that. So we've got a little routine where we get on the plane, and I usually have the window seat so that I get in, I'm sat by the window, out the way, and then as people are all boarding, you know, I try to avoid the bags.
It can be a bit of a mad dash, can't it, when one gets on
the board.
I mean, the herds just come on there, and with their backpacks on the back, and they turn and they clobber you. It's get a face full of rucksack. It's not helpful. The altitude doesn't cause problems, thankfully.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mad zone on the plane, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're an ambassador for the haemophilia. Is it haemophilia society?
Haemophilia society,
and that's the LGBTQ plus
ambassador.
So how long has that been going on? How long have you been doing that?
They created the post for me in 2019.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes. And it's an honour. It's a privilege. It's a shame it took so long.
Mm. How long has it been going on that? Has it,
the society was formed right back in, I think, the late 60s, I think, right. Something like that. But I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
Because of AIDS, there was no talk of sexual health. Obviously, I didn't invent being a gay haemophiliac. No. There were gay haemophiliacs before AIDS, and it was just that it wasn't spoken about. They went to the hospital and they were cared for in whatever way they were cared for, but it just wasn't spoken about. Mm. And then along came AIDS, and all the focus was on that. And it was like, right, okay, so the world has now moved on. We've got generations of haemophiliacs and people with bleeding disorders who thankfully missed the contaminated blood scandal. HIV hasn't gone away. No. So although the threat from blood products has dissipated and there's safer products and everything now, and most haemophiliacs are on synthetic treatments. So you've taken the risk away there, but then you're not educating them about the dangers and risks from sex or you know, everywhere else that everybody else faces. Yeah. And that's the thing that they seem to really fight. They didn't want to talk about it. I mean, I was told we're not going to promote homosexuality, and it was like, hang on a minute, you know, you're just... Yeah. Labelling things there, and that's what's wrong.
Do you think that was due to Section 28?
Possibly, and I think also just plain homophobia, because it was I would speak, and it wasn't speaking. I would speak as a gay man, but I was speaking as a gay man with haemophilia, and I know the things that I was doing, And I've said, with regards to our treatment and our joints, if you want to go into a nightclub and you want to skip around your handbag all night, okay, you might think about perhaps having treatment so that you didn't get a bleed in your ankles and your knees and you could enjoy yourself. But if while skipping around your handbag, you meet the man of your dreams, you go home and have the best sex ever, you haven't got to worry about internal bleeding. And that's the other thing. You know, you fall asleep in each other's arms. Yeah. You wake up and you can't move your arm because you've got internal bleeding in your arm. All of a sudden, you've got to confront telling that person that I've got a bleeding disorder, and it, all the can of worms that it opens up. Yeah. And it was really just sort of trying to say that, look, you're not on your own. We do exist, but also here's a few tips from this old queen. You know, be careful what you're doing.
Dance around a handbag a few times.
Dance around a handbag, yes, yes.
So when did you discover that you were living with HIV?
I was told in 1984 that I had been infected in 1982. And I choose that word precisely because we were used for research. So I didn't acquire, I was actually deliberately infected with HIV to see what would happen.
I'm shocked at
that. And what they did was they obviously knew how HIV spread through the gay community. Mm. What they didn't know was how it would spread through the general population. Mm. So they infected haemophiliacs and then watched to see if our parents, family members, people we came in contact with, if they became infected. Mm.
Yeah, guinea pigs, weren't you?
Literally, yeah.
Did you know that at the time?
No.
I remember, I've read some highlights from the inquiry, but there was somebody that said that the boys were cheaper than chimpanzees for reasons.
That was a minister, yeah. They, the arrogance of it. It was shocking. A haematologist who wrote to the minister complaining that the research he was doing on chimpanzees was now being hindered because the animals keep dying. And this was to do with hepatitis C. So the response back was, well, haemophiliacs are cheaper than chimpanzees. When you actually get deemed to be, the language around us has always been horrific. I mean, the life of a haemophiliac is an expensive one to maintain. We would only become ill-educated cripples if we really, you know, funded them. The sheep and chimpanzee. It goes on. There was complete and utter contempt and almost like, well, we can do whatever we want and you should be grateful. Even growing up in the 70s, hepatitis B was rife. And we were just told, well, it's just something you just have to get used to. It's part of the treatment. So they weren't going to do anything to stop it.
No.
It was, you've got to get used to it. And if it kills you at some point, be grateful. You know, you're not going to amount to much.
It's just horrible, isn't it?
It's awful
to treat people like that.
So dark. And the thing that, again, bringing it up to with my ambassador role, having gone through all of that, I don't want another generation to go through the same, being told the same thing, or being viewed the same way. Thankfully, with the treatments today, the things that our youth ambassadors now do, it amazes me. And I get like, we've just come back from Malta, where they went and did a fundraising event, and they swam from Gozo to Malta. And it's 5 kilometres, 4 kilometres, something like that. And I went there, and I mean, I wasn't swimming, but I just stood on the side screaming and shouting to give them encouragement. And as they came out of the water, I gave them a hug first of all, and I was so proud of them. But I couldn't have dreamt of doing that, you know, years ago. And with the joint damage that I have, thankfully, the treatment regimes, they don't have that as well.
Treatment's advanced a lot, just like HIV treatment.
Now we have, it's called prophylactic cover. So at the treatment I'm on, I have literally one injection a week. Most of the treatment regimes are sort of twice a week. But they go out and, I've got a friend who does the tough mudder thing?
Mud run?
Not Iron Man? It was like the Iron Man thing.
He does
that, the swimming and the cycling and everything. Severe haemophiliac does that.
Yeah, like, but like more sort of kid gloves, no wrapping big cotton wool.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, park. Yep,
I didn't have a bike, couldn't climb trees, no roller skates, couldn't do any contact sport. Yeah. And now they're doing that.
And it's changing. That's great because it's changing and evolving, isn't it?
Yeah.
So back to you, but you've got a launch, haven't you? Which is on the 29th, is that right?
28th, yes, 28th November,
So can you tell our listeners about that?
Yes, well, it's at the Two Brewers in Clapham, which I'm looking forward to. It starts at 7 o'clock. And, it's the book launch of Bleeding Fabulous. So we're building up to that. And my publishers at Incandescent, I was talking to them and they said that they released their books on the last Thursday of the month. Yeah. So we were looking at November. And he said that Nathan said to me that that'll be the 28th. And my lip quivered. I got a bit sort of teary. And he said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yes." I said, I believe in the universe. It shows you signs. So look for the signs. The 28th of November happens to be not only my mum's birthday, but it's this November. So next week will be my mum's 80th birthday. So I thought, if that isn't a sign that that's good, then I don't know what it is.
Yeah. It's called serendipity, isn't it?
So it is, yes.
I got that right.
So,
yeah. My favourite word. Serendipity, that's it. are you looking forward to it? I mean, I am. Getting people together. What's going to happen on that?
Yeah, so it's going to be a bit mad, I think, because there's people there from all parts of my life. There's family members, there's people I went to school with, people I worked with back in the day at British Airways, and then now right up to date with, again, my youth ambassadors and people at the Haemophilia Society and other victims of the contaminated blood scandal are going to be there. So it spans my whole life, and we've got Michael Thwaites, who's...
Where's it out again, sorry?
The Two Brewers in Canada.
Is it a ticketed event, or can anyone go...
No, it's an Eventbrite. It is ticketed. Sorry, yes, you do need the ticket, but which are free.
Right. Okay. Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to manage the numbers.
Yeah. So, from what they said to me, the room that we have holds 200, and they'd already had 174 confirmed.
Brilliant.
So I thought, okay, didn't know I knew that many people.
People are interested in it. So where can people, where do they get the ticket from? Is it your website? Because it's a website, haven't you?
It's not on my website, but it's just, if you look on Eventbrite.
Right.
And it's Bleeding Fabulous. Yes.
Right. Okay, so that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so as I say, from what Nathan told me last week, that it's looking very busy already.
So that's brilliant stuff.
Well, thank you ever so much for coming along, Mark. And you've chosen a song to sort of end this, your interview, haven't you? What's the song called?
I have, Well, it's Superstar by Love Inc.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's actually, this isn't about me. This is about how I feel about others. And it's my message that I want Bleeding Fabulous, my book, to give people encouragement and to look. And the darkness can take you at times, but you can get through it. And Superstar, there's lines in there, think of all the friends you've made. And that's what I do. So, yeah, this is my message to you. You're all superstars.
Oh, and so are you. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
So good. And we'll get you back on in as well. So.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, what a brilliant song that was, and how I'd love you to hear from Mark.
Oh, really good, yeah. I mean, it's so good, and good luck to Mark. It's just, it's just an ambassador, and yes.
And
he's still in the studio anyway.
Listeners, buy his book.
Buy his book. Excuse me, I was going to say that.
All right, then, go on then.
You have to buy his book. We had a laugh about that, probably. Anyway, moving on.
Welcome to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM and DAB Plus in the Brighton and Hove area. You can listen to us again if you go to the radioreverb.com page, listen again page, and in about a week or so's time, you'll be able to hear the podcast, which is downloadable on any of your sort of favourite podcast platforms. Yes. We have our own website as well as Radio Reverb, and our website is www.hivhour.org.uk. And you can email us. We love hearing from you, listeners. info@hivhour.org.uk. We are very proudly sponsored by Jack Russell Technology, so thank you to them.
Yes, brilliant.
Let's keep the lights on here at HIV Towers. We even had to put the heating on today, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
we did.
It was getting nippy outside.
We talked about doing HIV Hour weather, didn't we?
I want to do a HIV weather.
Right, next on the show, we have, you know, Philip Dehaney, one of our wonderful presenters. He's been interviewing Dan Harry. And Dan Harry, listeners may recognise his name from I Kissed a Boy, that series with Minogue. Danny Minogue, yes. Yeah. Did you see it?
No, I think I did.
It was fabulous.
Yeah, was it good?
Loved you said it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dan Harry's got a wonderful moustache.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he's actually, I think last year he shaved off his chest for... to raise money for H for Charity. I think it was for the Terence Higgins Trust. So that's how he got to know Philip. Anyway, here is Philip's interview with Dan Harry.
Fabulous.
Radio Reverb.
Making music night and day.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour and our very special guest. He shot to fame in a BBC dating show, I Kissed a Boy, and has since continued to support the HIV community as an ally and an activist. Joining us today is the gorgeous Dan Harry. Hello, how are you?
Hello, babe. Lovely to chat to you and see you again. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm good. I'm just I'm getting ready for the Red Run. I am, getting up to my usual tricks. What about you?
The same. So yeah, we're both taking part in the Red Run this year. So you came to support last year and now you're lacing up your trainers to join in. How are you feeling? How's the training been going?
You know, I'm actually like, I remember when I went to support you guys last year, I was so embarrassed because I was like, why am I not running? Everyone, all of my friends are running. Everyone I know is running. And I'm just here on the sidelines like, oh no, like I don't want to run 5K. So this year, I had to run, like I couldn't not run. So I'm actually really excited for it this year. I think it's just fun. It's just like everyone just gets into it. It's, you know, like it's Vicky Park. It's near where I live. It's I don't know. I'm really up for it this year.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, the World AIDS Day Red Run is every year at Victoria Park on a Saturday before World AIDS Day, where over 30 charities come together to raise money for HIV causes. So you're doing it this year for the Terence Higgins Trust, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, as you know, that's kind of how I met you. Phil is like, since doing I Kissed the Boy, I feel like I've been able to get really close with all the team at Terence Higgins Trust. And I just think everyone is just so brilliant there. The work that Terence Higgins Trust does and all the like the whole community there is just so brilliant. So obviously I'd want to support THT. And the last time that I did something fundraising with THT was the Big Shave Off. Do you remember that? Were you there for that? Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, of course. Yeah, that's when I met you. The Big Shave Off where I literally had my chest shaved on stage at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern. And yeah, actually, I feel like I'm less scared for this run than I was for that shave-off.
Yeah, so the Big Shave-Off, we all thought you copped out, to be honest, because you were going to come with Ollie, and we were trying to get you to shave your moustaches, but you were having none of it. Your trademarks.
There's many things that I'm prepared to shave, but my moustache is not one of them. The thing is, if I was to shave a moustache, I would literally become a twink in 20 seconds, and then it would be over for me. And it's like, no, do you know what? Like, let me just get my chest out and hopefully people like that.
And it was an incredible evening. Like I say, both of you came down. But that's not the first time we met. The first time we met was at the Pride March.
Where
you and all the boys from I Kissed a Boy came down to support us carrying the banner, I think you and Ollie were, weren't you?
That's right. I forgot about that. That was such a fun experience. That was crazy. Yeah, me and Ollie carrying the banner at the front. Although, do you remember, like, the pole kept, like, breaking because it was, like, windy or something? We were, like, trying to carry it. Like, it was just becoming, like, so stressful. Because also, we were trying to say hello to everyone along the parade. Meanwhile, this banner's, like, getting lower and lower and lower by the minute. That was, like, that. Do you know, that was probably one of the first times after filming the show that we were, like, okay, this is actually quite bonkers, you know? Like, people are wanting to say hello, and like there was just like a lot of love, and yeah, that was a really weird experience. But the reason why I didn't actually remember that is because I think we said hello there, but I remember you did your speech at the Big Shave Off. Remember that?
Yes, yeah. You were so great. It was nerve-wracking to obviously get on a stage and tell your story, but like I say, it was just such a privilege to, as it always is, to work with charities like the Terence Higgins Trust and to tell our story. What is it about the HIV community and the Terence Higgins Trust in particular that attracted you as an ally? Like, why did you want to help and support?
Yeah, like, this is like a sort of a funny one, because sometimes I actually do get nervous with the HIV community, because sometimes I'm a bit conscious that I'm like almost taking up space within that community as someone who's not living with HIV, and like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to take space or a voice away from someone else who's like probably more valid to speak on that than me. But I think like my whole thing is like, I grew up in like a little town just outside of Glasgow with very little understanding of sexual health and HIV. And like on my like journey as a young teen trying to figure out my sexuality, HIV was something that was just a very big like sort of black hole in my like knowledge and understanding. And like that led to me being really sort of something I was quite scared of, because I didn't really know what it meant. I just knew that I was gay, and I knew that gay people got HIV, and I was worried about what that meant for me, because I was like a young teenager who'd never met another gay person before. And when you're at school and those kind of places, no one talks about sexual health from any other perspective other than the straight perspective. So it led to a lot of fear of the unknown, really. I think from there, like whenever I then eventually became more like more ingrained within the gay community, and I met other people living with HIV, and my knowledge was sort of broadened, it just really changed my perspective a lot. I also like I then met people who were living with HIV, and they I heard about the stigma that they faced. My knowledge and understanding and perspective of HIV has really just evolved, and for that reason, it's something that I really want to be involved in and support the community. And I've always been interested in sexual health, and always just been interested in like the science of it. I got the opportunity to be part of a vaccine trial, which I think we'll maybe talk about later, around HIV. And from there, it made me even more interested, because by doing that, I got to meet loads of amazing doctors and nurses who've been working within HIV for like decades and have really like seen this thing evolve so much. So yeah, that's sort of what really piqued my interest. And then I guess in the last couple of years, because I've met so many incredible people, one of them being you, within this community, it's made me even more inspired to be a part of it, you know?
Absolutely. And just, have people reached out to you? Do you get messages from people kind of confiding in you or just welcoming you? Like you say, do you now feel welcomed and part of our community as an ally and an activist?
Well, actually, like, I get messages all the time like that. Like, I get messages of people telling me that they've just been diagnosed, or that they've just become undetectable, or like people who are really like confiding in me at all aspects of their journey. It's pretty amazing, to be honest, that people like consider me someone that they'd want to share that with. And whenever I do get those kind of messages, I'll always send a really considered message back, because I know that that must be something scary that they like for them to do. So I'll always give them like my real thoughts and my real like feelings back, you know, to support them. I get messages like that like really regularly. And like, I think, like I said, I never want to be seen to be like trying to take up space within that community. But if I can be like a supportive ally, then 1,000,000%, like that is how I'm going to use my energy.
And also within all this, because it's incredible what you do, and the fact that you are a kind of poster boy for us and to help us and use your kind of spotlight to kind of shine on our community. But I guess I can imagine, maybe, is there a kind of worry that people might extend a stigma to you and believe that you're HIV? Do you encounter that, where people might have mistaken you for being HIV positive and shun you in the same way that they might shun somebody who is HIV positive? Have you experienced anything like that?
100% I have, yeah. Like, people all the time just assume that I'm HIV positive. Like, honestly, like, that is like a very regular occurrence that I get. Because people are like, well, he must be, because why else would they be speaking on this topic? Or they look at my Instagram and they see the sort of things that I'm posting or talking about. They see me talking about THT. Yeah, all the time people just assume that I am like that I'm living with HIV. And like my thing with that is like I kind of don't really care. Like I'm a bit like, well, if that's what people think, then it genuinely doesn't bother me in any way, shape, or form. The thing is, I acknowledge that people living with HIV face stigma, and I think that's a total injustice in the first place. So I'm kind of like, do you know what? Like, if you want to assume that, then go for it, because like that's on you. If you're someone who has a prejudice against someone living with HIV, does that make sense?
Absolutely. And like I say, it just kind of reinforces our belief and our understanding that there is nothing to be ashamed of. And it is something that anybody can get and anybody can live with. So I think the fact that you are part of our community because you do face the same stigma and the same struggles that we as people living with HIV do get. And you're brave enough to stand up to that.
I also just want to like I try to and the thing is like I want to also say that I'm by no means a doctor and I'm by no means an expert on sexual health or HIV, right? I'm just someone who is trying to understand this like as much as I can, right, to better myself. And when it comes to something like HIV, like what we have now is like these incredible ways for people to live completely and utterly normal, happy lives, even if they're living with HIV. So I even try to like speak on like, even if I did have HIV, like it would be something that I would just take a pill for, or take a couple of pills for every day and get on with my life. Like it's not even like I try to remove the, not to take away obviously the history and like what it means to people, right? Because obviously it means a lot to people. But I think like removing the gravity away from it and actually just calling it what it is and saying, well, if you're like it's like going on to HIV medication is not completely indifferent to like me taking my PrEP every day, right? So it's like it's not like this life-changing world-ending thing like what it used to be, right? Is that right in saying that, Phil? Because that's like how I've always sort of seen it.
Yeah, absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's sort of what my take on it is. So I try to yeah, I mean people can think what they want. I actually really don't care.
We'll talk more in the next part of this interview next time. But for now, good luck with the, is it 5 or 10K you're doing?
10K, Phil, I thought I'd like just get it done.
Well done.
Oh
I
yeah.
did last time and I got a personal best, so no
Oh, did
pressure.
you?
I'm doing 5K this time with our gorgeous friend Ellie, only because we're doing it in costumes.
Yes,
So
I've heard about the costumes, by the way, and I'm very excited
it has to be seen to be believed. But for
to
anybody who wants to donate to you, how can they find you? How can they get in touch?
meet you. So go if you'd like to donate, first of all, thank you very much. You can go to my Instagram and there's a Just Giving page link on there. And all money raised obviously goes to Ten Seconds Trust. So please do support and also please come along and say hello.
Perfect. And your Instagram is
It's Dan Harry PR.
amazing. Thank you
Thank
very much.
97.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
Hello, here I am at the Zodiac Bar in London. I'm joined by the fantastic Joshua Royal. Hello, Joshua.
Hello.
And why are we here tonight?
We're here to celebrate the launch of my naked calendar featuring six brave models, all living with HIV or an ally of the HIV community. And we're going to have a great night tonight.
That's fantastic. And this is the first of two launch events of the
This is the
calendar.
first of two,
Yeah,
yes. And it's getting off with a bit of
it
karaoke.
is. You can tell it's a bit noisy, listeners, where you can tell the karaoke is in full swing. We've got some performers tonight.
Yes, Drew Diva, Rianne, and I'll also be putting on my pointe shoes for the first time in a long time.
Fantastic. And when's the next launch? Well, not launch, but what's the next
The
promotional
next
event?
event is on the 29th of November at Positive East
Yep.
from 6 to 9 p.m.
That's brilliant. And if people can't attend and they want to buy a calendar, where do they do that?
They go on to www.hivthenakedtruth.com and they can pre-order them there.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
You're
And
so
let's
welcome.
get back on the stage.
Radio Reverb.
I probed into its mysteries. Every clue told me a different story.
Radio Reverb. December's fast approaching.
It is.
And obviously, as we all know, December the 1st is a International World AIDS Day. And
yes.
Lots of events on in the Brighton Hove area, our community. So, Josh, what have you got on your little list of things to do? God,
yeah, so we'll talk about the, because we didn't mention when Mark was here, because we're doing an interview with Mark, aren't we, Mark?
Yes.
And Darren Kerr, who's been on the show, talking about his book, my brain's gone today.
The Brightonians Under Siege.
That's the one.
Great read.
And so we're on the 1st of December. Thank you. And we'll get there. Between 2 and 4 at the museum. So do you want to just... Yeah, so we're going to be interviewing you about your book.
Your book, yes, I'm going to be speaking to you again.
So it's going to be, I think David's going to interview Darren about his book, and we're doing questions and answers, and people can come along. I think that's capacity as well, but I think you can still get tickets, can't you?
When we last looked, I think there was about 7 tickets left. Keep looking. So that's at Brighton Hove Museum, isn't it? Brighton Museum.
It is, yeah. So that's on Sunday the 1st of December at the Art Gallery Museum. Mm. Go on to, I think, but again, Eventbrite, I think, isn't it? It's free as well. So
yeah.
Do go along, come and support us all. So, yeah.
So on December the 1st itself as well, there's Lunch Positive are doing one of their fantastic community lunches, and everybody is invited, whether you're living with HIV or not. The doors open at 12:30 and food is served from 1 p.m. So it's a great place to meet and congregate before the vigil, which actually takes place at 6.
So it's Brighton AIDS Memorial, and that's at the Newstein. You haven't said that, have you? 6 p.m. So please come along to that.
That's the candlelight vigil.
Yeah.
And there'll be a bucket collection on the gates of the Newstein Gardens, and that will be going to Lunch Positive.
Yes, and also World AIDS Day benefit concert on Sunday, on Sunday, 7:30. Tickets £13, and that's at St Mary's Church, St James Street. There's going to be quite a few choirs singing, actually, and we were hoping to get somebody on to talk about it next week, so fingers crossed we might be able to get someone on next week.
I hope so, yeah, because there's 8 choirs in total.
Yeah.
I mean, they can be quite competitive outside of World AIDS Day, but it's lovely that they all get together for World AIDS Day, and it's a nice way to finish the day off as well.
Also, there's I think it was mentioned in the interview with Dan about the Red Run, so if you still want, I think there's still time to join that, isn't there? The THT Red Run. So if you want to go to their website, tht.org.uk. Yeah. Just a few more things.
Yes.
So this is like for after, because there's always like a fundraiser after the vigil at either Charles Street or and now Centre Stage. So after the vigil, the Terence Higgins Trust are hosting raising funds for the Terence Higgins Trust at the Charles Street tap. Alfie Odom is going to be on Drag With No Names on Bag of Chips from from RuPaul's Drag Race.
You like RuPaul's? Actually, funny enough, when I was the calendar launch with Naked Truth, one of the people in the calendar is Charity Case.
Oh, right. So that's good. Yeah, brilliant. So that's on.
Naked.
Right. Free entry, raffle and fundraiser. Also, at Centre Stage, which is just up road, Sonia's going to be on.
Hello, Sonia.
Yes, Sonia.
Oh,
that was
Sonia.
So they're doing an event, but we'll mention this next week. We'll be more intent. Well, we'll have more info next week because we're doing an extra show. So
yeah.
Thank you, Mark, for coming in. Coming to the end of the show now, aren't we, David?
We have indeed. Yes, and what a fun, fact-filled show that was.
Yes, we are here next week.
We are
For World AIDS Day.
Yes, we are indeed. So the last show before World AIDS Day.
Yes.
I think after that, I think we're going to do a little Christmas special, aren't we? Our review of the year and what we've enjoyed the most.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll have Sue and Philip, and obviously Stephen's on his doing his Shadow Dreamer. So
yeah,
but we'll have more people.
We're going to see that, aren't we? We're going to see Shadow Dreamer. So yes, look, check the Shadow Dreamer website as well.
Yes.
Yes.
What's the song? The last song.
The last song has been chosen by Mark, and it is Shirley Bassey. This Is My Life.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Have a nice weekend.
Cheerio.
Bye. Bye. Bye.